This is Talking Clean with Irene, a podcast for anyone like me who wants to kick the toxins out of their life and live a more natural and sustainable lifestyle. Join me as I unpack how to live toxin-free with insights from scientists, doctors, the creators behind those beautiful organic brands we love, and other experts. I'm your host, Irene Falcone. For most of us, staring at screens all day has just become normal life. With all of our computers, laptops, tablets, TVs, and of course our phones, we spend so much time looking at them. Honestly, I don't know how many hours I must spend per day looking at my social media pages and answering everybody's questions and reading all of your feedback. That's my excuse for staring at my phone all day. But I do know it's probably too much time. The thing is, we can't really avoid it. But have you ever wondered what all those digital screens could possibly be doing to our eyes? And most importantly, it's not just us, it's our children and our children's little growing eyes. Today's episode is all about something called blue light. What is blue light, I hear you say? What could it potentially do to our eyes, and what can we do about it? Today, I'm speaking to Dr. Christy Goodwin, a digital health and well-being expert, university lecturer and author of the book, Raising Your Child in a Digital World. Christy is here to get right into the science behind what blue light is and what we can do to help protect our children. Hi, Christy. Thank you so much for coming on my show.
Pleasure. Great to be here.
We're talking about blue light and we're talking about the blue light that comes off our technology. Mm-hmm. So this is going to be a really difficult subject for me because I am, not going to lie, I am addicted to my computer. And when I'm not on my computer, I'm addicted to my iPad. When I'm not on my iPad, I'm addicted to my phone.
I can tell you're not alone. So many people, I call it the digital pull, and we find it so hard not to be digitally disconnected.
Do you know what I don't understand? I'm 45 and we think about the digital era and we think about our children. So my children are 8 and 13. Okay, yes, they're also on these, you know, devices. But my mum is also on her phone all the time, and I'll go to a cafe and I'll see two retirees also just on their phone. So can you just explain how did this generation, my generation and the generation before me, why have we embraced it so much?
Look, I often say no one is immune to the digital pull, whether you're raising a screenager, so a teenager or a threenager who is constantly tethered to technology, or whether yourself as an adult finds it hard to untether yourself from technology. The reason we've embraced it is because it allows our life to be more functional. It allows us to do things we previously couldn't do, or allows it to be done in a more optimal or more efficient way. And the other reason that we all find it hard, and the reason why our kids throw techno tantrums, the reason why we reach for our phone before our partner first thing in the morning, is because technology has been intentionally designed to prey on our psychological vulnerabilities. You know, there are very deliberate design techniques. You know, for example, the autoplay feature on television streaming and YouTube is a default setting because it makes us enter something we call the state of insufficiency. So we never feel finished, we never feel done. And so there's a whole lot of reasons that make technology so captivating. And that's why we've all embraced it. As you said, whether you're a grandparent or a child in school, we all love our screens.
And so is there something that you were saying before we turned the mics on, and this just has blown my mind, it's so true, that bloody little number where it's got that I've got 856 unread emails. It gives me anxiety.
Yep, we call it techno stress.
Right.
And we also know there's a condition, believe it or not, a condition that has been examined. So we've put people on a whole lot of machines so we can actually measure their physiological response when they go into their inbox. And there is a condition called email apnea. We hold our breath, we dump a whole lot of cortisol, the stress hormone in our body, our heart rate accelerates, and that is driven by a whole lot of factors. And one of them is exactly what you described, the metrics. You know, there are deliberate techniques that have been deployed, for example, putting your unread notifications in a red bubble with a number in it. triggers our brain into thinking that it is urgent and important. Red has a psychological impact, suggesting that it's associated with an emergency or danger. And the number, the quantifiable metric, forces us to feel that we have, a huge number of emails to tackle. And we are hardwired as humans for something called social reciprocity. So we want to feel like we belong. So if we think we've got to get back to 800 potential people, we have this desire to fit in, and so we feel compelled to check them.
Wow. And social media, that's got to be, that's one thing for the gaming and the emails, but have our lives really become our friends on social?
Well, many of us think they are. We have 875 followers on a platform and believe they're our, and our young people believe they're our true connected friends too. It's interesting because the more connection we have had, more connectivity, sorry, we have had, the less human connection we're having. And it's such a huge problem. Our number one psychological driver as humans is the need for social connection, relational connection. We just are hardwired to belong and be part of groups. And in the UK, loneliness has become such an epidemic in the last couple of years. There is now a minister in the UK Parliament of a Minister of Loneliness. It has such a profound impact on us. So we're together, but alone. We're connected, but disconnected. So it's something that impacts. And social media, it can be great when it's used in the right ways. We can connect with people that we might have lost touch with. We can bolster relationships. But if we use it excessively or inappropriately, ironically, it can damage our relationships.
Wow, I feel like I'm in therapy now. Can I tell you the word, something really bad?
Go for it.
Do you?
I've heard lots.
Okay, tell me how bad this is for me. And I know we're talking about the overall health benefits of social, and we're going to get into blue light soon, which is the real topic, but I have to confess.
This can be good.
Yeah. Do you know I will not take an overseas holiday because I don't want to be on a plane with no internet?
Do you know what? It's really interesting. I've got a lot of parents that tell me they didn't realise, and we've got to be careful about using the word addiction. I think many of us have formed unhealthy digital behaviours or a digital dependence. To be clinically diagnosed as having an internet addiction, there are a whole lot of, criteria. That's sort of the...
Are you diagnosed?
Well, I'm not. I'm not going to do
it. Am I showing the signs?
But one of the signs of an internet addiction is what we call withdrawal. And withdrawal is literally, as the name suggests, having symptoms, physiological symptoms where we have when we are withdrawn from whatever the stimulus is that we like, so whether it's alcohol, technology. And one of the criteria to diagnose children and adolescents with an internet addiction is to demonstrate withdrawal symptoms. But the problem is kids use technology so much now that they often never get to experience what withdrawal's like. So it's really hard to actually measure that. And many parents say they didn't realise that their child had such an unhealthy digital dependence until they went on an international flight and they saw their child literally start to combust at the airport, and then it deteriorated on the plane. And they thought there might have been some anxiety around flying, and it wasn't until they delved into it and they realised it was that digital disconnection. And for many of us, it really is akin to cutting off our oxygen supply.
Is it an excuse that I'm running my own business and I'm worried I'm going to land, however many years, it feels like years. I'm going to finally land overseas 10 years later and look at my Facebook page and have someone didn't get their order and I haven't been able to get back to them. And
that driver to be socially connected is such a critical psychological driver. And it really is. It overrides the logical thinking part of our brain. And what we know, this is one of the reasons, and sort of going off on a tangent here, but this is why we've got to be careful about using technology, particularly at night and with our young people. We know that most cyberbullying takes place at night. And I'm not suggesting you're a cyberbully, but this is why we find it hard to switch off, because the part of our brain, the frontal lobe that helps us manage our impulses, it's basically the CEO or the air traffic control system of the brain, it turns off when we are tired or late at night. And the part of the brain, it's called the amygdala, which is the emotional part of the brain, it takes over. And so this is why when we're in those fragile states, our emotional brain, our limbic brain takes over. And so we don't make careful, considered decisions.
Is that why I get the mean comments at night?
100%.
I get really mean comments at night, and I get really mean comments actually also on the weekends. Is there something about lockdown time? Or
could be just having greater capacity to do that. But it's really interesting. This is why you shouldn't be emailing your colleagues or your boss late at night, because our logical brain's off and our emotional brain's on. So we'll send a terse message or we'll send something that we'll later regret. But hands down, that is why most online predators, most cyberbullying takes place at night, because that part of the brain switches off.
Wow. And I guess the trick with emailing your boss late at night or someone when you're annoyed is save a draft. right? Yes. Save as draft.
Keep
and
it
then,
in your outbox.
Yep.
It's like drunk texting, you know, just don't do it.
Yeah, I have so many. I just hope that probably everyone's probably listening to this. I have so many emails in my drafts that I've written over the years that I've never sent. Okay, so let's talk about the big health issue with technology, and that's the blue light.
Yeah.
And how is that affecting not so much our minds but also our actual physical eyes, like our pupils and retinas and that sort of thing?
So blue light, first of all, is something that's natural. It comes from the sun, and so it is a really important part of our lives. And so it's not necessarily harmful in and of itself, but when it's used for prolonged, or when we're exposed to it, as we are now in a digital world with the plethora of screens that we've got, you know, smartphones, laptops, tablets. We also know one of the biggest culprits of blue light, which may come as a surprise, is actually LED energy efficient lighting. Many of us have switched to more energy efficient options in our house, but are completely unaware that this has dramatically increased our blue light exposure.
I've got them in my house because my electricity bill was ridiculous. And
It's such a trade-off. And I do it. So, you know, maybe picking one area of the house where you spend most of your time at night, and that's a critical point. Blue light exposure is actually really helpful in the daytime. Our brains need it to reset our circadian rhythm, which helps with our sleep. We know that blue light, particularly from natural sunlight, helps with our mood. It helps with our capacity to pay attention and focus. This is why if you've got young kids and teenagers, getting them out in the morning in natural sunlight is really helpful. It boosts their mood and their focus. But the problem is that we are now being bombarded by blue light in a 24-hour period, and this has huge implications on our eye health. You know, we're seeing damage to the retina. We're seeing increasing rates of macular degeneration, which we're associating with prolonged exposure to blue light. And we're also seeing some research that's suggesting it's having a really big impact on our sleep habits, both the quality and the quantity as well.
So everything that you're saying, just to be clear, it's all research backed, isn't it?
And I'll be completely transparent. The research in this field is still relatively, you know, in the big scheme of things, in its infancy. We don't have a lot of longitudinal data because we really haven't been using technology the way we do now in terms of that, you know, 24/7 access. So the research is still emerging, but there is a fairly conclusive research base that tells us that time on screens, that prolonged exposure to blue light can have some negative impacts on both our eye health and also on our sleep habits.
Yeah, okay, wow. So I think the biggest concern for me is, okay, with my age, perhaps I've got another 40, 50, 60 years with these eyes and it's probably okay, but our children are on iPads in the pram to keep them quiet, let's be honest. Is there any research about the development of eyes?
There is, and we're really quite worried about young children's visual development. We have seen a very big increase in myopia, which is nearsightedness, in both young children and adolescents. And we thought it may have been looking at screens too often at a close distance, which we often do. We're often using more handheld devices now rather than a big screen TV that kids once watched. And we still think that there's a genetic component to that risk factor of myopia, that it is what technology is displacing that is really harmful for kids' eye development, and that is time in natural sunlight. Young children need 10 to 15 hours per week in natural sunlight, in vitamin D, to elongate the part of their eye called their myopic nerve. And many kids, because they're spending more time inside on screens, aren't getting that amount of time. And so that's contributing to the increased rates of myopia in kids and adolescents.
Gosh, and then how about when they're in bed and they're watching something on their iPad before they go to sleep?
This is a big problem for particularly, it's for all of us, and the research is still emerging on the impact of blue light on both sleep duration and quality. But what we know is that ideally before we go to sleep, our brain, a part of the brain called the pineal gland, secretes something called melatonin. It's the sleep hormone. And what's happening is that all of us, when we use our screens, when we've turned on the LED lights in the house, our brain gets tricked into thinking, don't go to sleep, it's morning time, be aroused, be, you know, awake, be alert. So our body doesn't make the melatonin that it needs. So we don't start to feel sleepy. And for our prepubescent and pubescent kids, this is a really big problem. It's a double whammy because as they hit puberty, biologically, their circadian rhythms change. I don't know if you remember when your kids started to approach this age, they didn't want to fall asleep when they regularly had. Their sleep time, bedtime wanted to be pushed back. And that's because their body circadian rhythms naturally want to fall asleep later and they want to wake up later.
But school doesn't start later,
no,
does it?
Not in many capital cities.
They should.
And in some places they are. In Victoria, they've had a really big uptake of delaying the start of school, particularly for secondary kids, to meet that change in the circadian rhythm.
I absolutely agree. I mean, if my daughter could just start school at 10,
yes,
and stay later, that would work so much better in our household rather than the stress of getting her up. And
it would work for so many kids. It's what we call it, your chronotype, and that is when your energy levels are at their peak. And we know for young people, particularly pubescent kids, their energy levels tend to be more optimal later in the day rather than first thing in the morning. But for our teenagers, those circadian rhythms have always changed. You know, that's nothing new. That's been sort of an evolutionary part of our history. But what the double whammy is, now we're giving our young people, or they're getting them themselves, their digital devices. And so their brain is getting flooded with that blue light, and that blue light tricks that pineal gland into saying, stay awake, don't fall asleep, don't make melatonin. So their sleep delays are exacerbated. So they're really falling asleep later. And the other part of the problem is that many kids now have their digital devices in their bedrooms. So they're often getting awoken by alerts and notifications. Even if they're switched off, just seeing their device can be a psychological trigger to start thinking about how many Instagram posts I've missed, or how many likes my post got, or how many levels of the game I missed out on when I went to bed. So it's a really tricky place to navigate for all of us, but having a big impact on our sleep.
Okay, so let's talk solutions. Mm-hmm. I want to talk to you about these blue light glasses, mm-hmm. because I started stocking these blue light glasses at Nourish Life because one of our buyers, and she's just gorgeous, and she came in and she had these glasses on, and I said, did you get glasses? They really suit you. You look hot. And she said, no, they're these Baxter Blue glasses, and they cut out the blue light. I thought, I'm going to look so much smarter if I have those. I actually thought they were to help eye fatigue, you know, on the computer. So I thought, well, that'll be good for me because I'm on the computer all the time. So anyway, I got the company in. They brought this machine with them that showed me the blue light come out, and they put the glasses in front and it literally blocked it out. Mm. And then this is sort of when my research sort of started, and I found you. These blue light glasses, and there's a few different brands out there. Some of them are very yellow.
Yes.
Some of them are not. Can you just give me a sort of an overview on how they work and... Yep. Their technology.
So the Baxter Blue glasses block out 50% of the blue light that comes through digital devices and through other light sources as well. And they also block out the UV that comes off our screens. And so this can have huge benefits. As you alluded to, one of the biggest benefits of wearing these glasses is that they stop retinal damage. So what we know is that blue light comes in and our eye, our cornea and our lens doesn't have the capacity to block or to reflect blue light. We instead absorb it. And so over prolonged periods of time, as we're now exposed to in terms of blue light saturation, this can have really big impacts on both our retinal health, on macular, increasing rates of macular degeneration, and on that sleep issue as we talked about before. The problem with macular degeneration is that it's cell death and it's permanent, so it's irreversible. And so while the research is still keeping up to date in terms of longitudinal evidence and long-term impacts, I'm cautious, Christy. So I don't say, let's not wait till we've got proof of harm that our screens and blue light exposure is damaging. Let's take some preventative steps. And that's why I personally use and recommend the blue light blocking glasses. Baxter Blue glasses block out 50% of that blue light.
And they look good though.
That's the trick. Yeah. There are, as you said, suggested, there are a huge range of other products on the market to try and convince your 13-year-old daughter that wearing some hideous, thick Coca-Cola style orange glasses, it's not going to cut it. So in terms of their greatest benefit, I think the Baxter Blue glasses really help with that eye strain. They take away the blue light that our eyes are constantly absorbing throughout the day, and they can have a beneficial effect. And Baxter Blue are telling us they've got a huge number of anecdotal evidence from their happy customers saying that the glasses actually do help them with their sleep.
And they've got them for men, women and children and kids. My year-old actually walked in when I had them on, and he was like, Mummy, have you got glasses? Is that the reaction? And I explained to him actually what they were, because he's actually on the iPad all the time. I feel like the worst mum in the world now, actually, after talking to you this morning.
No guilt.
Oh, so guilty. But he actually asked me for a pair and I didn't bring them back from work. I forgot. And he asked me the next day, did I have them yet? And so I thought, hang on a second. If we could make this cool for kids, and my 8-year-old's pretty popular at school, I think if he turned up with these, I think that he'd be able to sell a lot of these glasses for mummy. And my 13-year-old with her 3,000 Instagram followers. But I guess the point is, you know, if we can make it cool for kids.
That's right.
We can really have the added benefits of eye health.
Absolutely. And I always say prevention's better than cure. So if we can start to put some strategies in place that kids will adopt, you know, we can have all sorts of rules and strategies, but if they're not practical and kids won't follow them, they're not going to work. So this, you know, wearing the glasses in combination with some good eye health practices, one of the best strategies I share with kids and when I speak to corporate clients about their digital well-being, one of the easiest strategies to implement is called the 20-20-20-20 rule. And that is every 20 minutes you use any screen, your phone, your laptop, desktop computer, tablet, gaming console, you take at least a 20-second break. So every 20 minutes, a 20-second break, you look at something. You train your eye to look at something in the distance about 20 feet.
I thought you were going to say 20 minutes then. No, I was thinking, that's not possible.
You off. No, I'm not going to suggest you digitally amputate yourself. So 20 minutes, a 20-second break, look at something about 20 feet away, which is about 6 metres, and blink 20 times. When we look at a screen, we blink about 66% less than what we would ordinarily. And so this is why we often get sore eyes. We have dry eyes. We call it computer vision syndrome. So I don't know about you, Irene, but a long day at the computer, I often feel like my eyes ache. I get headaches. We often feel drowsy. That's because we're often just not blinking enough. So getting into the habit, it looks peculiar to do at first. Looks like you've developed a random twitch, but blinking where you can. And that's a really good habit to develop with our kids too, that 20-20-20-20 rule.
Wow, that's a great tip.
It's an easy one.
That's great. That works. So do you wear these glasses all day? Can you drive in them? Can you just explain a bit more about them?
You can. The Baxter Blue glasses can be worn over a 24/7 period. Some of the glasses that block out all of the blue light, we suggest not wearing those during the daytime, because what actually happens is if they block out 100% of the blue light, the natural biological benefits we need from absorbing blue light from the sun or absorbing blue light in our physical environment can be minimized. We know, as I mentioned right at the beginning, blue light is really essential for our mood. It helps us to feel like we are alert. This is why I said get your kids out in sunlight in the morning. It has that natural effect on our circadian rhythm. It also regulates our circadian rhythm too. But the Baxter Blue glasses, given that they block out 50%, are fantastic to wear throughout the day. I try and wear mine throughout the day, and I also find wearing them at night, personally, I've found, because I don't often walk my talk and I'm scrolling the gram just before I go to bed.
I'm so glad you said that.
Oh, yeah, I'm not perfect at this either. I'll reply to a message and you'll see what time it comes in. But wearing them at night too, I have found, has had a really big impact on my sleep as well.
To go one step further, how about those night – I mean, I'll be honest, I tried the night mode and it just – I couldn't see the screen. It's just all grey and orange and – so is that another alternative or?
It can be. But as you suggested, most of us find it so hideous that we end up, it probably has a positive impact because we can't stand looking at it, that we end up putting it down or turning it off. That night shift mode that you talked about, and there's an equivalent on Android devices, doesn't actually block out the blue light. All it does is warm the screen. So it's more of a yellowy, orangey tone. So it can help in terms of that sleep impact, but it's not necessarily blocking the blue light.
Oh, hang on. So all these people that are putting it on night mode that think that they're getting no blue light out of their device, they still are.
Yes.
Well, that's an important message to get out.
Especially if they're sitting underneath their fluoro lights, they can dim the, you know, have night shift mode on, but they're absorbing all this blue light from their overhead lights. So this is where I often say, you know, put on, if you can, have one or two lights in the house where you tend to spend most of your time in the evening, shutting the curtains and put some non-LED lights just in those spaces where you are usually going to recline at night. Use candles. They can be great, particularly if we want to promote healthy sleep hygiene as well.
But yeah, beautiful many of beeswax us, candle.
Yeah,
get rid of the toxins at the same time.
Exactly.
That nice yellow light.
Yep.
Okay, just blow it out before you go to sleep.
Yep. One quick thing there I was going to say, if, you know, you don't have the blue light glasses and you don't want to do the night shift mode, another really simple solution with all devices is just to dim the brightness. Going into your settings or on your laptop, when you're using it at night, just dimming how bright it is will diminish the amount of blue light that you're being exposed to as well.
Yeah, I don't like doing that.
No.
I like it nice and bright.
So pop your glasses on.
Yeah, I will. And how about if you've got prescription glasses already, how do they work together?
Yes, so prescription glasses can have a pigment added to the lens. So if you do wear prescription glasses, speaking to your optometrist and having the blue light filter added to them is usually a minimal cost increase, but something you can certainly look at doing as well. But it does need to be applied to the actual lens in your prescription glasses.
Okay, so you can't wear them on top of your...
No.
No. Okay, so for anyone with prescription glasses, you need to get your optometrist to build it in, to add it in.
Filter.
Okay,
absolutely.
So that's worth however extra that cost to put in. I've got to share something with you, and I don't know how relevant... I don't know how relevant this is, but I started doing something in the last 2 weeks that's changed my life with sleep, and I saw something on social... Of course I did. I saw... My phone was listening to me one night, and I saw this thing pop up on social media. And I actually don't stock this product at Nourish Life, but I'm thinking about maybe I need to contact them. It's a new sleep mask that I found on social media. It's like $35 US. And it looks pretty cool, actually. It's a bit space age, but it has these like pads in them, and it 100% blocks out all the light, all of it. Because I've got lots of light coming through my bedroom, and also like the TV's in there. It's got the light flashing, LG all the time flashing, and then I've got chargers flashing, and I was still feeling tired when I woke up. So, you know, I saw this ad. So I bought them. I have to tell you, I think they've changed my life. I put these on and I automatically, as soon as I put my phone down, even at 10:30, 11:30 at night, and I'm really awake because I've been scrolling without my glasses, but I'll put the eye mask on and I'll fall asleep straight away, and I sleep in nicely, and I find that it puts me into this, it's supposed to put you into this extra deep sleep. I think it really does. Is that a tip?
Absolutely. Making your physical sleep environment as dark as possible really does promote healthy sleep habits and good sleep hygiene. And the problem living in the 21st century, where we've got street lights, we've got, as you said, the, you know, huge number of digital devices in our room emanating light, really does affect our body's production.
Even
of
alarm clocks, like the red light on that. Yeah.
So where you can, and that's a great idea, a mask can really help. There was a study done in 2013 at a Swiss university, and they found that even small amounts of blue light whilst we sleep just before we go to sleep can really impact the amount of time we spend in the early stages of our sleep in what we call slow wave sleep, which is that deep sleep that we need that's really restorative. So what you've just described is basically what this study found, and that is that really minimizing your exposure to blue light will really promote optimal sleep.
My only regret is I have to put my Fitbit back on and monitor that, because before I bought it, my Fitbit said I had really bad. I was sort of never getting into a deep REM, and I'm sure I am now because I feel different. I'm going to put this
tracker.
I'm going to start tracking it, see if it's made a difference, and if it does, I'm going to stock that mask. I think it's called the Mantra mask, but it's just really great. Little things. It's things like this that make such a difference.
They do. My mantra when I run seminars with both parents and corporate clients is I say to us, this is all grounded in neuroscience and research, but the funny thing is that I've discovered as a researcher is that the basics work if you work the basics. And so many of us try and overcomplicate things. If we go back to what are the basic things that we need the room to be dark so we can go to sleep. So how can we facilitate that in the 21st century? We can wear blue light blocking glasses. We can wear sleep masks. We can shut the curtains and do all those sorts of simple
things. Yeah, we don't do it. We just don't do it. And then we do it once and we're surprised.
Share it on social media, and then other people will do it, and then you'll have some accountability.
Exactly. I've got to get this message out. I'm so grateful. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I think so much of what we talked about is so important. If we can just, we discussed so much. If we just sum it up, can you give me the top three tips for what mums can do for their children to help promote better eye health for when they get older?
So first and foremost, I'm going to go back to the basics. I'm going to say get your kids out in natural sunlight. Get them playing outside. It has, you know, a huge number of physiological and psychological benefits for them. Time in natural sunlight will help with that myopic nerve. It will bolster their energy levels and all their positive neurotransmitters, serotonin and dopamine, which makes them feel good. So it will increase their mood. And every mum knows that grumpy kids are a pain to deal with. So get them outside. I would also say encouraging some of those really simple strategies when they're on their devices, the 20-20-20-20 rule. If we can get our kids at a young age doing this so that it becomes a habit, you know, they're blinking when they're using it, they're having a break, and they only have to have a 20-second break. They don't need to cut off completely. So implementing some of those strategies. And I think the third one, and I know as a mum, I've got three kids, and this is the hardest one, but being a good role model yourself.
Oh,
I know.
Do not, I say, not as I
that's right. That's right. But where you can, you know, switching off or showing them some simple ways that we can also digitally disconnect will have huge impacts for both of us as well.
Yeah, you're so right. Thank you again. Thank you so much.
Thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for listening. This podcast is produced by Nourished Life, Australia's home of toxin-free shopping. To learn more and get all the show notes, visit us at nourishedlife.com.au. If you have any feedback about the show, you can reach me on Facebook or Instagram at Nourished Life, which is all one word. Don't forget to subscribe to Talking Clean with Irene in your podcast app. And finally, if you like what you hear, please give me a 5-star review. It really helps other people to find the show. I'm your host, Irene Falcone, and I'll speak to you next time.